It's been a tough week politically and personally for Denise Roche. A tough couple of months, I suppose. Where we've seen the support for the party drop by almost 2/3 over those couple of months, and Denise lose her seat in Parliament. So we're really appreciative of you coming in this morning, Denise. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
So it has been a tough couple of months, though, hasn't it?
Oh, my goodness, has it ever. Like a roller coaster. In fact, I think at one point we were calling it a polar coaster, just because of the differences in the poll results all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we're still to see the final outcome. I think the special votes are going to be announced this afternoon at 2 o'clock. I mean, are there kind of inside thoughts in the party about how that will go?
Yeah, we're fairly confident that we will get another MP out of the specials to get our 8th MP in, who is Golriz Garaman. I think we need like 0.3% and that's easily achievable. We usually do quite well in the special, so we're expecting to get one for the Greens. It's potentially there'll be another one there for Labour, which I think is really good, because that takes it takes positions away from National, which then changes the balance of power and the number of MPs that they have. So that may have some bearing on how Winston Peters is feeling and about who he'll go with.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been interesting locally as well, hasn't it? I mean, we've seen, you were at the candidates meeting, of course, and one of the things I remarked on there was how the party vote on Waiheke has moved around significantly over the last few elections, where we've seen different parties ahead. You know, went from a period of Labour being ahead and then National being ahead and Greens being, National being third behind the Greens. And now we've kind of flipped around again, and the Green vote really took a hit locally this time, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, we still achieved quite a high percentage comparatively, and compared to what our end percentage was, which was 5.9%. But here on Waiheke and in Auckland Central electorate as a whole, we got something about 13, nearly 14%, which is an indication, I think, of the type of demographic that we have here in the electorate generally, but specifically here on Waiheke as well. Waiheke, finally, we saw the party vote go to the left again, which is great, because in the past, I think at the last election, National. National won Rocky Bay polling station, which is like unheard of. And Nikki Kay crowed about that for quite some time. She was very proud of it. But it does really kind of reflect how our population has changed here as well. That that malleability between the political kind of the way people think politically has really changed as our population has changed, as property prices have increased, as poorer people have left the island because they can no longer afford to live here. And that is reflected in the poll result too.
Yeah, well, interesting. If you look at, say, compared to the National picture, you'd probably say on Waiheke, there was a significant movement from Green to Labour in terms of party vote. That you probably could say as well that there was actually quite a movement of National Party vote to Labour on Waiheke.
Yes, you can. Because last election, 2014, National won the party vote and the Greens were second. But this time it was Labour, which is fantastic. And this is what Colin Bearden actually set out to achieve some time ago, well before the campaign started. He wanted to have a discussion about how you bring Waiheke back to Labour and the Greens, how you get that left bloc taking precedence again.
Now, 2 months ago, you were set to easily be back in Parliament, and now you're not. The party has gone through turmoil, there must be some bitterness.
For me personally, not really. No, not really. That's politics. It's our list ranking process is really, it's our members that make the decisions. So it's really, really democratic, but it's not necessarily very nice.
Yeah, but I suppose that the things that impacted weren't so much the list setting process, weren't they? I mean, you know, as you say, it's a very kind of democratic process. It was the inner workings of the caucus, really, that in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there must still be some tension amongst the you know, those you know, the green power brokers around some of that.
Well, so Metiria made an announcement as part of a policy package announcement at the AGM in July, which and during that she talked about how she had lied to Wins in order to have enough money to provide for her and her baby. And we did really, really well after that announcement. And the whole decision to make that announcement was not just hers. So every member of caucus had her speech and had the policy well before, 5 days before, in order to give feedback. And there were the two MPs who decided that they could not work alongside Metiria as the co-leader anymore, including Kennedy Graham, who lives here on the island, made that decision after she'd made the announcement because they had not participated. They'd chosen not to read the speech. So the thing was that process, there was the caucus involved in giving feedback, there was our senior staff and political advisors involved in giving feedback, there was our campaign committee involved in giving feedback. None of us, absolutely none of us, because I have to take responsibility too, none of us actually predicted how the media would go with that, where they would go with that, and the digging that they would do and just how painful that would be for Metiria's family. So, yeah, we could have survived and we could have and we attempted to, but it was very difficult to double down on that whole policy about the war on the poor, because we're not just an environment party. We could have survived that. However, there were two factors. One was that we got dumped on by two of our own members of parliament who walked, which was unprecedented, just, you know, never happened in our history before. And the other was the amazing thing that was the excitement around a change of leadership for the Labor Party with Jacinda Ardern. And we saw in our polling, our internal polling, a lot of our female membership, as soon as Jacinda became the leader of the Labor Party, a lot of our female support moving across there.
So, I mean, you talked about Kennedy Graham and Dave Clendon, and you know, I suppose, I mean, the falling off of the support, you know, yes, some of it was around perhaps, you know, people's viewpoints on beneficiaries, but some of it as well must have been around kind of, I suppose, the you know, as you said yourself, the political misjudgment in the end of how it would fall out. And there must be a degree to which people said, this is a party that should have anticipated that this would happen and wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, I guess, and that's, yeah, you know, in retrospect, that's probably reasonable criticism. That is. I think I said in the Gulf News that we looked flaky. And again, it's misjudgment on our part. But it was kind of compounded by looking even flakier, by losing two of our MPs, and despite Metiria standing down as a way to try and deflect attention away from what was, you know, the media, the scrutiny and ridiculous things that they were coming up with. Despite that happening, we still looked flaky.
And that can't have been helped when she appeared to kind of change her mind afterwards and kind of say, I've got more to do. I want to come back. I want to be back.
No, she was actually campaigning. She was campaigning for the party vote. And she was saying, yes, if the voters in Te Tai Tonga, which is where she was standing, wanted her to carry on, that they could vote for her. But she did well with the party vote in that electorate. So she did her job. And, I mean, I pretty much said the same thing, really. I have more to do. But it was unlikely that I was going to get back in.
So, as the, you know, post-election, now the party, Green Party, is in a kind of a rebuild stage. You know, you'll be wanting to lift that percentage vote back up significantly before the next election. You've got a co-leader to elect, and there will no doubt be in that process, I suppose, some of the differences that have emerged through this last couple of months will come to fore in that process, won't they, of the selection of a co-leader? You know, there'll be...
Oh, the left-right divide?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I guess it depends how it plays out. I mean, right now the focus is on, will we be in government? Will we be part of a coalition government? And that's where all the energy is going, including our democratic processes, because 75% of our membership have to agree to whatever deal is handed out, which means that we're unlikely to go with National. So that's where the focus is now. But then straight after that, really, we do get into the whole co-leadership selection process, and that I think nominations for that position have to be in by March or the end of March. So there's not a lot of time, and by then we will know who is standing. There is a kind of a within the party, because it's such a broad church, and people join our political party for different reasons. But we're based on four charter principles, including social justice and ecological wisdom and appropriate decision-making and peace and non-violence, as well as acknowledging te tiriti o waitangi. So there are some people who are more aligned to one charter principle than others, and that does, of course, cause tension. But it's how you deal with it is where the democracy happens. So the processes that we have in place are really robust, so that we come out with not damaging ourselves, not damaging each other as members, and with a decision that we can all live with.
So I want to come back to those different principles in a moment, but in the selection of the co-leader, do you think that there will be, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a sitting MP, does it? But do you think that there would be a feeling that it should be one of the sitting MPs?
The way the party is organised is that we have the co-leaders, who are the leaders of the caucus. We have the co-conveners, who are the leaders of the party itself and the executive. And then we also have policy co-conveners. They are, we call them the three petals, and they are of equal standing within the party itself. What was the question again?
We went through a period, I mean, because you had a period, didn't you, where Russell Norman was a co-leader outside of Parliament?
Yeah.
Do you think that there will be, from the membership, a feeling that one of the sitting, five female women, should be co-leader?
Yeah, and that was the point that before I just sort of got distracted, was it's more likely that it should be a person from caucus, but they have to certainly be closely aligned to caucus, because it's a representative of caucus. We have had it in the past. You don't have to be a member of caucus to stand as co-leader or be co-leader, though, because Russell Norman, after our co-leader died, Rod Donaldson died in 2005-06. Russell was not a member of Parliament, but he was selected to go on the list very high up as a result of being the co-leader.
Mm, yeah. So, and of those women who will end up in Parliament, you've got what, three who've got some experience. So what? Eugenie.
Eugenie,
Jan,
Julianne, and Marama.
Oh, Marama, of course, four.
Yeah.
So, okay, so there's that process to work through. But as you say, you've got until March to do that. So that those decisions about, you know, where the party sits can be dealt with. Now, this kind of brings us back to this kind of the thing you were talking about different principles. And there's a lot of discussion at the moment, it seems to me, mainly from people who aren't either Green Party members or Green aligned, that that the Green Party should focus on that environmental principle and form a coalition with National and try to progress environmental issues in that way. What are your feelings on that?
You can't separate people from the environment. You just can't. that totally interlinked, and the charter principles that we have are interlinked. They're not one's bigger than the other or better than the other. Because as soon as you start saying that, you say, oh, well, we shouldn't worry about the economy then, because we should just focus on the environment. But you can't, the way our society and our economy runs at the moment, you can't actually separate those two out either. So, no, we've never just been an environmental party. People are part of the environment. So it's in our interest that the resources that this natural world provides are shared fairly. And that's what social justice is. So, basically I tell them to thank you for your advice, but we won't be listening to it.
Although there are other countries where green parties have formed coalitions with right-leaning parties.
That's right, and generally they haven't. They've been punished afterwards. And that's what would happen to us.
So, you know, when you look back, I suppose, you know, it's a step away from Parliament that you didn't want to make, but you know, when you look back over the time you have had there so far, who's to say you won't be back there at some point? But I mean, what have been the things that really stand out to you when you look back over that process of being an MP?
Oh, yeah, look, there's heaps. It's such an amazing privilege to be a member of Parliament and to be involved in making the laws, you know, the legislation. One of the things I think that still gives me makes me feel really still quite emotional is the work that we did on marriage equality. Being able to vote on that was incredible, and it really hit home a few months after that bill went through, when I went to the wedding of two women who live here on the island and just realised that this had made this amazing difference for them, and they'd been together 20 years or so. So that was one thing. There were other things I think that that really stood out as quite painful as well. Being in opposition, I've had 10 years as a politician. You know, if you think about when I entered the city council, when I was elected to that, that's almost exactly 10 years ago. And I've always been on opposition. So that's a real regret on my part, that I've not been able to actually have my hands on the levers where you can make significant change. But you still can do stuff when you are in opposition, and that is about holding those who have the power to account. So a really big thing was walking out of the chamber when the Prime Minister said that we supported rapists, and as an orchestrated way of actually highlighting the fact that you don't joke about rape. And it was also to highlight the intrinsic misogyny of that whole bloody system, actually. And the misogyny of a lot of the members of Parliament that were there.
So, I mean, you talked about that frustration of not being able to make change legislatively, and now recently we've seen Countdown Supermarkets announce that they're going to stop using plastic bags, which is a campaign you've been actively involved in. But that, I suppose, is a victory which has come about through activism and community organisation rather than politics and legislation. So is there a lesson there? Is it better to focus on you know, consumer pressure, activism, community organisation, rather than expect legislative outcomes to the things that threaten our community?
Well, it is both. There is both. And, when I got the email from Countdown, I responded to James Walker just to say thank you. That's a really nice way to end my time in Parliament, because I'd been campaigning around this one issue for 4 years. So in opposition, your role is to basically try and make those changes still. And being a a campaigner and an activist is a really useful skill, because you can't do it by yourself. You have to connect with the with other groups that are doing it. So one of the things with the campaign around the plastic bags thing that I did right at the beginning was to use the resources that I had as a Member of Parliament to hold public meetings right across the country, and I held 28 of them. Because there are people and community organisations right across this country who care about the environment. And the whole idea was to try and put waste on the political agenda. And the plastic bag issue is the most tangible one that you can do, as well as it being... it would have an enormous impact if we did actually get rid of single-use plastic bags at the checkout. So it was connecting those groups with all those resources, and it was actually starting to ensure that we built the momentum so that we put pressure on both politicians and the retailers themselves. And so along the way, we got things like the local government New Zealand, voting on a remit to lobby government to put a charge on single-use plastic bags. We got the Packaging Forum introducing soft plastic recycling at supermarkets as a way of undermining the campaign, which is what they told me to my face. We got the Retail New Zealand finally saying, yeah, actually all our members want us to do something with single-use plastic bags. We had councils right across the country, including the Mayor of Auckland, saying they wanted the power to do something in their own areas about reducing and getting rid of single-use plastic bags. So it was utilising the resources, the amazing resources of Parliament, to be able to support that community activism. But just saying that, the retailers can do it voluntarily, doesn't actually address the wider problem, which is there needs to be regulation around packaging. We could actually be banning some stuff that we don't need, like they have done in places like France, where they're phasing out, you know, plastic plates and cups and things like that, you know, picnic gear. They're phasing that out because there are alternatives that are available. So we could have regulation that would do that, and it would make a significant difference. And so we have to keep the pressure on, and community organisations do. But actually, when they do that, what that will do is it will shift not only the retailers, it will shift the Parliament and the government to make decisions as well.
So as we head towards a kind of a final decision in this election, I mean, even after the Green vote was dropping in the polls, there still was a time there where you must have looked and thought a change of government is imminent. With those combined Labor-Green vote. And in the end, you know, some of that vote fell away. But there is still that option, that three-way option with New Zealand First. I mean, you've worked, you know the viewpoints of your Green colleagues around the Labor and New Zealand First MPs, and you've worked with MPs from both of those other parties. Do you think that is a viable partnership?
Yes, I do. Because the policy connections are actually closer, I think, for New Zealand First, the policy connections are closer to Labor than they are to National. We have some differences with Labor as well, actually, which is good, I guess. It means that we can all attempt to influence each other. So, for example, I personally hate the immigration policy of Labor and New Zealand First. But if you're in a coalition, what you would seek to do is to try and influence and minimise their kind of what I would say is, you know, difficult sort of policy. But if you have to think about what New Zealand First have been saying lately, Winston's been saying lately about Pike River, that's closer to Labor, the minimum wage, that's closer to Labor, people from overseas who are not New Zealand citizens or residents buying property, that's closer to us. So, so I think there is the possibility that we could. And it's kind of like people sort of, you know, the whole narrative that was built up about, three parties, it's not going to be terribly stable. The last government had four parties. So really, it's not going to be an issue.
And have you started to think about what you're going to do next?
Yeah. Well, I, It's kind of weird. I'm transitioning to civilian life.
So you've still got, though you're still on the payroll, you're still an MP, aren't you? Until a new government is formed, or how does that all work?
No, I'm no longer an MP.
You're not?
No.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a redundancy pay that you get. And it reduces as you get closer to the end. So it's 3 months, which is, a very generous redundancy pay if you think about what workers are getting. So I've got this buffer zone to kind of decide what I'm going to do. And I guess opportunities, if I think about the work that I've done in the past, like around working with trade unions, for example, there'll be different opportunities depending on the government as well. But I'd actually like to just hunker down on the island for a little while and just get my act together and figure out what I'm going to do. And I'm a little bit tired because the campaign is like you're running full tilt and then it's just a sudden stop. So just need to figure out.
Do you think you will return to politics at some point?
I don't know. It's too early to tell. People have suggested local government, and that local government can be quite vicious, really vicious. It's a blood sport here on Waiheke. And I just need to have a think about whether that's actually what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, look, as I say, I appreciate that it has been a really tough time for people in your party and for you, and do really appreciate you coming in so soon after, because I imagine things are still quite raw. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. My uncle died on election night. That kind of puts it into perspective. So, we're okay. Thanks for the opportunity to come in and talk to you about it too. It's good fun.
Okay. Go well, Denise.